Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, April 27th, 2026. I'm Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Zach Horwitz, and Cassidy Palmer. It was a week of offensive breakthroughs and missed opportunities for Indiana baseball as an explosion of offense in Muncie was followed by a painful home series sweep at the hands of Iowa. While the results have placed the Hoosiers' active record Big Ten tournament streak in serious jeopardy, the emergence of Big Ten freshman of the week, Owen Tenuver, provided a significant silver lining for the program. The week began on a high note Tuesday with a 20-10 run rule victory over Ball State. With the lineup shuffled due to illness, Owen Tenuver stepped into a major role and delivered a massive first-inning grand slam to help stake Indiana to an early lead. Hogan Denny also put on a power display with two home runs and seven RBIs, while Landon Fry added three hits of his own. Despite three defensive errors, the Hoosier offense was relentless, amassing 15 hits and 12 walks to put the game away in eight innings. The momentum stalled as the Hoosiers returned home Friday, dropping the series opener to Iowa 12-2. Graduate lefty Tony Newbeck struggled with command, allowing seven earned runs over four innings. However, the night was etched in history books when Caleb Koski recorded an infield single in the fifth, officially setting a modern program record with 22-game hitting streak. Tenuver continued his hot streak, finishing 2-for-3 with a double and an RBI, but the team overall stranded 11 runners on base. Saturday's 9-2 loss was a game of what-ifs, as Indiana hitters frequently made superior contact, only to see deep fly balls caught at the warning track or in the gaps. Sophomore Brayton Thomas labored through three innings, hampered by command issues. Tenuver provided the lone spark for the offense, crushing a solo home run in the seventh inning to account for Indiana's first run. Unfortunately, the day also saw Caleb Koski's historic hitting streak come to an end, as the Hoosiers were limited to just three hits total. In Sunday's finale, Indiana showed late-inning grit, but fell 7-4 to complete the sweep. Making his first start of the year, Jackson Yarberry was victimized by defensive lapses early, including a dropped pop-up in the sun and a double steal attempt that resulted in two runs scoring on consecutive throwing errors. Gavin Siebold kept the Hoosiers within striking distance with five brilliant innings of scoreless relief, striking out six. The offense rallied for 11 hits, led by Tenuver's impressive three-hit day and a pinch-hit RBI double from freshman Cal Gates. Despite the late surge, the Hoosiers stranded 10 runners, preventing the breakthrough hit it needed to flip the result. Now sitting at 9-25 overall and 6-15 in Big Ten play, the Hoosiers face a steep uphill climb to qualify for the conference tournament. Cass, as I mentioned there, Indiana played some poor defense on the week. I think you did some analysis on exactly how damaging those defensive problems were for the Hoosiers.
I did, and I actually looked a little bit full season as well, and honestly, with one set of games, the defense has largely been decent over the last few weeks, with chunks of lots of zero errors or one error that didn't do any damage. The occasional dropped foul ball that ended up reaching but didn't do anything after that. Those aren't the errors we're concerned about. What did get a little more concerning this week was the stacking of errors and how those resulted in runs. Now, against Ball State, that didn't end up mattering at all. Gave up two unearned runs that both reached via in the same inning, and they both scored the at bat after that second error. But with what ended up being 10-run victory, yeah, those two unearned runs don't matter too much in the scheme of things. Didn't have any errors in the first game against Iowa, then had another two errors in the second game against Iowa. And again, it was two batters reached via error in the same inning, and both scored in the at bat after that second error. And while technically it didn't matter too much in the grand scheme of things, Iowa won by seven, that's still two runs that would have been beneficial. And really sticking the dagger into things was Sunday's game, where IU lost by three after giving up three unearned including one guy who reached via error and scored the next at bat and wouldn't have otherwise scored if not for the error. And then some bad news bears level of play with error on a caught stealing compounded by an error throwing the ball back in. Two runs scored when neither would have scored otherwise. Given, again, all of this is kind of hypothetical of given how the innings played out after the errors. If they had played out similarly, would not have come around to score. That turns it into a tie game. And that kind of starts changing. I mean, we mentioned like the momentum had shifted toward IU. Without those three runs, that could have been something different. Now, looking on the season, after a bit of a rough start error-wise to the season, which we've talked about before, happens almost every year because of the difference of not getting out into the field, starting the season pretty much exclusively in Mellencamp, and then going and playing on a whole bunch of natural or mostly natural fields. We expect some amount of errors early season. That's just the nature of it, in all honesty. We hope that they're not costly errors, but we accept those errors early on. We know it's going to happen. And it seemed to turn around exactly as expected of large decent chunks of time of either zero errors or just all didn't matter style errors. And big picture, it really hasn't been horrible. There have been four games on the season where the number of runs lost by is equal to or less than the number of unearned runs given up. So where like, yes, this absolutely mattered. This might have changed the game. There was the game on Sunday against Iowa, the third game against North Carolina, and then the back-to-back games of Indiana State and Nebraska. But really, in the scheme of this season, yeah, that's four games. Like, yes, it sucks, but there were just as many games where the unearned runs given up didn't matter at all because IU was so far ahead, including one, like, for example, at Bradley, where IU went on to win by 12 runs. That one unearned run, not that big of a deal. And in fact, out of the 24 games thus far with an error, 12 of those games, those errors haven't mattered. Nobody has come around to score unearned off of them. that gives me hope. Like that's an encouraging sign. That's a good thing to see, that largely the errors aren't being costly, but when they're costly, they tend to be pretty costly, including what we saw on Sunday. We'd like to see it get cleaned up. Again, we've had these long stretches without errors or without significant errors. So, if we can see that going back toward that mean, going back toward that average of play, and I think we will. I think this is more of a fluke than a true concern right now. I think it was just kind of a little bit of everything all at the same time. But Feeney, that was a look at some defensive miscues. What plays do you want to highlight in the Red Belts this week?
All right, so for our Red Belts of the Week, for the first one for the pitching award, I'm going Gavin Seabold for his 5-inning performance. No earned runs, 6 Ks, 2 hits, 97 pitches. I was shocked he went out for the last inning. But you know what? Maybe we were going to come back in the ninth. And I think they were just like, Seabold's going to make it happen. Give it a shot. Threw 97. But obviously, it wasn't enough. We couldn't get enough offense going, but he did his best and he kept them at zeros. And nobody else kind of did throughout this series. Offensively, Owen Tanuver. I mean, 2 home runs, hit 500 for the week, hit that grand slam against Ball State. And it just the power off this kid's bat. I was there, what was it? Was it Saturday when he hit the bomb? I mean, I know this guy wants to play more, right? He was the number one catcher in Brooklyn. He was the number one catcher in New York State at the time when he was in Brooklyn, and he played a ton. And from what I remember reading, there was like a senior ahead of him, and the senior got hurt. So Owen's been playing a ton, even early on in high school. And now suddenly he doesn't come on the field. But I get it. You got to wait your turn, that kind of thing. But anytime he's had some pinch hit opportunities or extra hit opportunities, he's crushed a ball. All right. There's a sound of his bat. That's special, and we need more of them. We need more on Tanover because we need more runs. So Owen earns his I've got to be his first, right? His first red belt. It really is it his second? His second red belt, and for the Alex Dickerson Award. And then for defense, I was talking to Carl about it late Sunday that I really didn't have, and I went to all 3 games this weekend and watched most of the 20-10 game. Really didn't have a one outstanding play, right? Well, there were plenty, but they were in black and yellow. So we really didn't have one outstanding defensive play. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use this week's award for the defensive award for the Tony Butler to give it to Braden Ricketts. Okay, he started a ton more games than he has probably thought he was gonna. Now with Denny with the injury, coach doesn't want to really throw him right behind the plate. I totally understand that. And catcher is kind of like offensive lineman, right? Sometimes you only hear about them when they mess up, right? When they throw the ball in the center field instead of throwing it to second. When they don't cover the plate right. When I don't know, when the ball gets by him because, it's a pass ball. Well, there's been none of that lately. There's been you never hear this dude's name. And I think because we haven't heard his name, he's winning this award. So Braden Ricketts is going to get the defensive Red Belt of the Week for the Tony Butler for his consistent his you know his great play. Whether maybe there hasn't been one outstanding play, but there's been day after day after day of consistency. And I honestly don't think as much as he wanted it, I don't think he thought he'd behind the dish. Yeah, he'd be behind the dish as much as he has been. So that's going to be our 3 awards: Owen Tanuver, Braden Ricketts, and Gavin Seabold. And we're going to kick it over to Carl. I mean, if you were at the BART Friday night, the lights went out for about 15 minutes. And Carl's going to explain how the lights might be out on our tournament chances.
If you take a good look at the standings right now, it's pretty ugly. IU is at 6-15 in the conference, which is 15th place. And right now, that is Maryland is at 14th, and Maryland has the head-to-head tiebreaker over IU. The thing is, you got Maryland with that head-to-head tiebreaker ahead. Then you've got Minnesota is two full games ahead of IU, and Minnesota's at the 13 line. They're not even in yet. So Indiana's two games behind another team that isn't in the tournament right now. And then you go to Michigan State, who has not had their bye week yet, and they're at 10 and 14. Now, the one thing you can say is that Michigan State is playing UCLA this weekend. So there's I would not say just a chance, but a likelihood that Michigan State gets swept. But even let's just say we assume that. We assume Michigan State gets swept. That puts them at 10 and 17. IU would still, just to tie Michigan State, and I'm not sure how the tiebreakers work out against Michigan State because all of the tiebreaker rules and such. Just to do that, Indiana would have to finish 7-2 down the line, which would mean, which essentially basically means sweeping Northwestern and then winning the series at Purdue, which, given the states of the two teams, that's a tall ask. And then, sorry, winning the series at Purdue and then winning the home series against Illinois. That's probably a little bit more doable, but even then, probably not something a lot of people would predict at this point. So a 7-2 run down the stretch, and that might not even be enough. Because if either Maryland or Minnesota also plays well, then it's, yeah, you're in a world of hurt right there. So when we talked about this the last few weeks, essentially an Iowa series win was part of the of any package that included IU having a shot. Now there's still a mathematical shot. There are still chances things could break a certain way. It's not completely impossible. But at this point, it's now in Indiana's going to have to play at the really at their talent level, where the consistency matches the talent level, which is something we just haven't seen much of. So that's where the conference sits right now. So not great for IU. We also have our pick'em contest. And it looked like Cass was about to run away with things. And that is not the case anymore. Cass is still in the lead, but Cass only has a single series edge on Zach now. Because Zach, along with one of our junior players, Bowen Bennett, had 7-0 weeks this past week. So congratulations to Bowen as well on a 7-0 week. But Zach is now a series behind. I am a series behind Zach because, you know, finally my constant picking of Purdue went against me. In fact, they got swept by USC. So, that was the only one I missed, though. Chris also only missed one. Chris's self-proclaimed homer pick did not help him in the pick'em contest. So he is also. But that's actually kind of interesting because you have Cass one series, Zach one series, me one series, Chris. So we're all within one of each other. So it's that's entertaining. And now we have a, let me switch to preview mode here. We've got the upcoming week. We're obviously not picking, at least this season, we're not picking Indiana. So Indiana's at Northwestern, but the ones that we're going to pick include Illinois at Iowa, Michigan at Maryland, Minnesota at Penn State, Nebraska at Ohio State, Oregon at Washington, Rutgers at USC, and UCLA at Michigan State. So let's have, since he had a 7-0 week, we're going to have Zach start us off here.
All right. Well, I don't want to tie, so I need to start making some different decisions here. Where I think I'm going to go with my wild card on the first one. I think I'm going to take Iowa to beat Illinois. I thought they were pretty good this weekend. Obviously, they swept Indiana, but their pitching was much better than it was on paper, that's for sure. So I'll take them to win the series against Illinois. I'll take Michigan at Maryland, Minnesota at Penn State, Nebraska at Ohio State, Oregon at Washington, and then I'll take the two California teams, USC over Rutgers, and then UCLA over Michigan State.
Okay. I know you say you don't want to tie, Zach, but I have the exact same picks. I swear.
You're not gonna like this, but I do as well.
Yeah, because here I'm going to actually.
Well, we've got what, two more weeks after this, or
Yes.
three? Two.
Two more after this. Yep.
All right. I gotta make one or two different decisions over the next few weeks. I need the
Well,
back-to-back title. I don't like this.
it didn't help that UCLA, with who UCLA, USC, Nebraska, Oregon are all playing, those felt very obvious, even with the majority of them being on the road. I think Iowa, Illinois is a toss-up, but I gave Iowa the home field advantage.
Yeah, and that plus there was a difference. Like you compare Washington playing, and so we talk about teams that did well against Indiana. Iowa really looked the part this past week. And their Friday pitching in particular, which statistically had not been good, looked really good. And it looked good in person. And to me, it was a matter of they had a bunch of command issues. And these young pitchers have figured that out, but they have awesome stuff. And it's different with Washington, who executed really well, but the talent wasn't there. And really just outplayed IU when they didn't really have the talent. And that's just something I don't think is necessarily repeatable. While I think, Iowa goes home and they're, yeah, it's completely repeatable. So, Chris, what do you have?
Well, I think I might have the same picks too. It's Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, right? Nebraska, Oregon, SC, UCLA. Yeah, same
Has
thing.
this ever happened before?
I don't
Four
remember.
of us?
I do not think
I
so.
don't think so.
Now, Drew and Bowen are breaking with us. They are going with Maryland against Michigan.
Oh.
And they're going with the two home teams in the in this series. They're going with Penn State over Minnesota.
Oh.
And that's, I mean, those are home series,
Yeah.
and we know Maryland is good at home.
Yep.
So that's not, I don't think that's at all a gimme.
No.
So yeah, both, yeah, they matched each other, and those were the two that they were different from us in. So yeah, it's gonna be, yeah, but for a rather consistent But you look at what we've done as a group. I mean, Cass is 45-9. That's
Nuts.
nuts. Chris, at the end of the four of us, is 42-12. I haven't actually gone back to last year, but I think that would have been a one ranking. What Chris is doing now would have been a one ranking last year.
Let's see.
And I was making my picks off of March Madness. And I'm telling you, this time last year, I was like three series over 500 at best. I mean, I was underwater most of the season.
Let's
It's.
see. Let's see. Looks like right around this time last year. Yeah, 40. No, this is a week later, but 42-19 was the lead spot. I think that's just too far in the season,
Yeah. But the point is that's a
but
lower percentage. That's
yeah.
a significantly lower than percentage than what Chris has in fourth place right now.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, 38-15 was a tie.
Yeah, it was I mean, and part of it was that we had not seen the West Coast merged into the Big Ten yet, and that
Well,
caused all kinds of upheaval.
and they weren't necessarily as strong as they are this year.
Well, right. I mean, UCLA, the Big Ten has not had a team anywhere near this dominant since Indiana in 14. That was the last time a team was that dominant in the league. And it's, yeah. And what's and the other piece, though, that's interesting is that there is no actual bottom feeder. The five teams at the bottom are all doing better than the worst team last year. And it like last year, it was like you had a, but of course, that was the part that was weird about it was that Ohio State, only managed to win four games, but half of them were in one series against the team that won the conference. That was the kind of weird stuff that happened last year. So.
Yeah, one win separates the bottom four teams. Penn State, Northwestern, Indiana, Maryland.
Yeah, and
It's
it's all
one win.
more and it's all more wins than the worst team had for the entire season last year.
Yeah, it's 6-5.
Yeah, I think Ohio State only won four or five last year by the end. And we're still 9 to 12 games out. Okay. Now I do have a preview of tomorrow night's action at Louisville. It will be brief. Louisville is not as good as they were last year. I mean, they were an Omaha team last year. They are at 10 and 11 in the ACC, so they're right in the middle of the ACC pack, 26 and 18 overall. That being said, they are on a 5-game winning streak. They swept Clemson, and they beat Kentucky in the midweek last week. They used five pitchers in that game against Kentucky at 1 and 2 inning stints. So I'm not going to kind of go through all of the details of individual pitchers. And I'm only going to talk about one player, and that is the ACC's home run leader right now, sophomore first baseman, Tegg Davis. He has hit 26 home runs on the season. What I find fascinating, he's only walked 31 times. I think that's less than a walk a game, which is shocking to me given the home run power. I would not be upset with walking him two or three times tomorrow night. That's just a 1.382 OPS, 387 batting average. So he's not just hitting tanks. He's getting on base a ton too. So 486 on base percentage, and given his plate appearances, I think he leads off, which would make sense in the modern era that that's what they're going to be dealing with. But they've got some guys with pop. They've got some guys with good OPS. This is a team that slugs it. And it was a shootout that they played. They won that game, but they won it in a shootout. I think it was like 14-10 or something like that. So and the wind will it's not going to be a strong wind, but it will be blowing out at Jim Patterson Stadium in Louisville tomorrow night. So that's something to expect. I very much assume I haven't actually. I think we might have announced it. I didn't actually look. Did they announce? Is Connor Lynn for sure starting? Okay, so Connor Lynn will be starting, and it might be a Jamie. He didn't throw all weekend, so it may be a legitimate start. If he can do what he's done several times, he could go 3 to 5 innings to get the Hoosiers going in that midweek contest. And I think that. At this point, the goal is just play good baseball. So, if he's going, I think they're going to let him run. So that is the game at Louisville, And Zach is going to have our preview of the upcoming series in Chicagoland, which will not be at a single location. And Zach is actually going to be there. So, Zach, what can you tell us about Northwestern?
Yes, really looking forward to it. Friday night at Wrigley Field. I'll be there Friday and very likely Saturday in Evanston. So we'll see my coverage on that. So yeah, Friday night at Wrigley Field, the next two in Evanston. The Wildcats won 12-2 over Ohio State last year at Wrigley Field. I mean, honestly, just great for the sport. We've seen games in the Bahamas and Puerto Rico, and now Fenway Park just 2 weeks ago with Boston College, and then Northwestern gets to host one at Wrigley Field. So if you are going, it's super cool at the friendly confines. The Cubs play earlier in the day. That's a 1:20 Central start, and then they play the Diamondbacks and then Indiana Northwestern at night. The Northwestern center fielder, Jack Lausch, he's their best player so far this season. He should be pretty comfortable playing there. He had multiple football games at Wrigley Field over the past few years. He was the starting quarterback for the Wildcats back in 2024. He didn't play this year. I'm not sure if he still plays football, actually, but he didn't play at all this past season. He's the best hitter on the team, 304 average. So that kind of tells you all you need to know. A 304 batting average is the best on the team, and he's the home run leader with nine. Noah Ruiz is their other threat. He's a 300 hitter who leads the team with 33 RBIs. So, pretty low down in the statistics of the Big Ten. Their pitching staff is last in strikeouts. The highest they have the second highest team ERA at 7.28. Indiana has the fourth highest now after this past weekend, allowing I believe that was 28 runs over the 3 days to Iowa. But Northwestern's Friday night starter, Jake Reifenberg, he has a 6.86 ERA, 1.67 whip. So I know Tony Newbeck hasn't been too sharp in his last two starts now, but him getting a start against that guy at Wrigley Field, I would think that Tony has the pitching advantage. So I think that would be a big one to win, especially Friday night. Just have that experience, the atmosphere. That's something you can remember about the season, especially given where they're at right now. Northwestern, their other two starters, Matt Couser and Ryan Weaver, they have a 5 ERA and a 7 ERA respectively. So, certainly won't be overmatched in terms of the numbers. I'm curious to see the offensive output this weekend. It's going to be 45 degrees on Friday at Wrigley Field, and also just being in a big league park, the depth perception and just kind of the whole ambiance of the park. So, very curious to see how that goes. As we talked about in the last segment, Indiana's just 6-15 in the Big Ten. Northwestern is 5-16, so that's the only team they'll play that's behind them right now. Northwestern is last in nearly every category, offensively and defensively, in the Big Ten. So with the spot that Indiana sits in now, you feel like you kind of need to win this series, and specifically Friday night at Wrigley Field. Not all the games are at Wrigley Field, but Chris, I don't think we have any Hoosiers in the pros playing at Wrigley, but do we have an update on that?
Well, we've had a homer barrage from the Pro Bowl Hoosiers. Kyle's hit his ninth home run, which gives him 17 RBIs. Philip Glaser's hit his first home run of the year. Devin Taylor hit his third home run. This has all happened in the past week. So we've got power coming from our alumni, which is good to see. Jack Perkins picked up a save, and now that adds on to his win that he's had. So he's really shining out in Oakland. Well, Oakland or whatever they're called. What are they? Sacramento now? Las Vegas? Whatever the A's are.
They're just called the Athletics.
No, but they tried to patent that and they couldn't get that either. They couldn't get the Las Vegas Athletics. Somebody stole it from them or got it ahead of time. So I'm not sure what they're called. But yeah, Jack Perkins has really been shining there, and the bats. It's been the offense that we've been seeing a lot more of. We do have a promotion. Ben Grable has been promoted already to the AA Somerset Patriots, the Yankees organization. That's
Awesome.
pretty quick. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? It actually came across as a text while we were doing this from guess who? David Welch. So
And he was
Grable already
pitching less than a year from pitching for the Hoosiers. That's awesome.
right? I mean, and I'm looking around. I haven't looked it up, backed it up. I don't need to fact check David Welch, okay? The man texted me and it says Grable already promoted to double A. So I'm going with that. But yeah, that's been our alumni. The Mets won a game. I know we spent some time on it last week with the losing streak. We did win. Well, we won two actually in a row since the last pod, and then got swept at home by Colorado. So it was a rough weekend for me baseball wise. Hoosiers got swept at home. Mets got swept at home. But the draft went pretty well. Jets picked up a couple of Hoosiers, so I'm happy about that.
All right. While there are still 10 baseball games left to play, with the hope of even a conference tournament berth now in unlikely territory, let's talk about the state of the program. What kind of improvement can we expect to see in what's now a pretty rapidly approaching off season? So, who wants to kind of jump in on this one?
Carl, actually, you and I talked about this a little bit. I think you should start us off here today.
Okay. So it's interesting because I do sometimes look at some of the conversations that are going on nationally. And obviously, I see a lot of the frustrations that the fan base for IU has had with how poorly the results have been this season. And there's also that balancing act between the talent level, because we see a really good talent level for the most part, but we're not seeing the results. And I know a lot of people love to point to coaching, but understand coaching has impacts very greatly in both of those. So, what I'm looking at though is, when I mentioned on a national level, for example, the fans of LSU. When IU played LSU, they were the number two team in the country. There's a real chance they're not going to make the NCAA tournament this year. And that number two ranking, and IU saw that team, a ton of talent. These guys can mash. But while they can mash, they haven't really meshed. And they haven't been able to do well in the SEC. They haven't been able to come together as a team. And there's multiple programs that have done this, that have gone into the portal, brought all this talent in from the portal, and are just not making it click and making it work to actually win baseball games. While the team that is the most successful in the country has only, plugged in a few holes from the portal. Mostly has taken a team from 2 years ago that of mostly freshmen that didn't win 20 games in a whole season in the Pac-12, and they were in the Pac-12 20 games for the entire season. So they won 19 the whole season. Remember, IU's already won 19 this season, and they're now the undisputed number one team in the country in the UCLA Bruins, and a lot more people are looking at that model of get a bunch of talent young, go through all of what you got to do to learn the game of baseball. There's a reason that there are five levels of minor league baseball, is because it takes a long time and a lot of playing to get to the point at which you can play the game well and consistently. So at the college level, there's the you plug them in strategy from the portal. And of the so of the two extremes, this year at least, it's showing out that the developing players and dealing with some of the struggles with that pays dividends. Now, yes, a lot of IU's core pitching group is going to not be back next year just because they're going to be out of eligibility. But for the first time, pretty much since 21, they're actually going to have a decent core of pitchers to at least have a foundation. They're not going to have be having to rebuild the entire pitching staff. That's just been something this team has had to face year after year after year, having to rebuild the entire staff. Now, I will give former pitching coach Dustin Glant some props that I know a lot of other people wouldn't give, with the fact that He had the ERA in the five range his last season, and that was a year they really had to reconstruct the entire pitching staff. But now you've got Jackson Yarberry is throwing near starter level innings. Brayton Thomas, while he is draft eligible, I've not seen his name much on draft boards. I don't think it's probably in his best interest to be drafted this year. So you've got very likely you still have Brayton Thomas around. You've got the emergence of Ivan Mostolski as a freshman, Kellen English as a freshman. While we haven't seen a lot of success yet out of Javi Carrera, I think that's coming. I think that's just a development piece. He's been out this season. We haven't seen him at all, but Blaine Metz was the biggest name in this class coming in, and he's on this team, and that's another arm they're going to be able to add in the coming year. That's a really nice foundation to build a pitching staff off of. So that's something that you add that. And they've already got one grad transfer commit from the Ivy League coming in. So you bring all of this together, and the position player group could potentially be almost in its entirety back. It definitely, especially the starters, you'd be looking at the entire position player group coming back. And that is where that added experience. We know this group is talented. You bring them back with a year of experience. Most of them are going to go play in the summer. And there's been, at least in the consistency piece, there's been a little bit of regression year over year with some of these guys. You might call it the sophomore slump. I think those are things that are going to work their way out. I think having gone through the kinds of struggles, and if you go back and listen to some of the things Coach Mercer has said this year, that's kind of what he's been hammering home, has been it was almost intentional. It was almost like we're going to put them through the toughest possible gauntlet we can put them through so that they have experienced all of that. Give them some time off to reflect about that and then be able to say, you know what? We can come together as a group and play good baseball. And for me, the rest of this season, that's all I'm concerned with. Yes, I would love to keep the Big Ten tournament streak alive, but given the format of the tournament, it's not like it's really winnable outside the top four anyway. So yes, I want them to finish strong. But above all else, I want them to start having fun. And I think Coach made this point. Cass, you were talking about the Bad News Bears style errors, and Coach addressed that in his post game, and it was they were playing desperate. They were so hungry to win that they were doing whatever they thought was necessary, and it turned out they were doing too much, and it wasn't their job. It's like it's not. It's not the center fielder's job to to try to cut off a run. In that scenario,
Right. Get the ball back
it's
in
you get the
safely.
ball back in, let the team just get control what you can control. And that's what there's a lot of people out there and people who care deeply about this program who are taking the attitude of let's just start over. I think that is not the way to go when you've got a team this young. I think this team is poised to be a really good team next year.
And
And so, you go ahead and jump in. I'm sorry, I kind of monopolized things. I'm sorry.
no, but what you're saying is true. To me, I would say let's and I never want to say like accept mediocrity and any that is not what I'm trying to say. But this is the first what I'd call truly bad year of IU baseball we've seen. We've had a few disappointing years, but they were competitive years still. This is the first, outright bad. Just no sugarcoating it. It's a bad year. I'm gonna say we should learn from the IU basketball side of things and perhaps not jump immediately to starting over. We saw that that has not gone well at all in the years since Crean was removed. There's some big picture stuff to look at, and I don't think starting over from scratch is the way to go at this current time. Like you said, with how young the team is, all of that, starting over is not gonna be particularly beneficial here.
Yeah, I would also mention with that, over this transfer portal era of college baseball, I feel like Indiana has gotten everyone back who they wanted to come back. That if they go into this offseason after what is certainly a disappointing year here, they still have a hitting core that I'm looking at the stats here of Koski, Hogan Denny, Jake Hanley, Cooper Malamazian, and then Cole Decker's having a great year as well. Those
And
five
Sandoval.
guys right there. And then you have Braden Ricketts, who has now come on as a catcher playing defensively, and he hasn't been swinging the bat that well this year. He's hitting 230, but I feel like there's a lot of potential there, and that they have these core guys that make up the bulk of the team. And I think even with this kind of year that they could have them all back. And obviously, you throw in a couple pieces from the portal because that's just what you have to do at this time period. But I think that the growing pains and you struggle together and you're with each other on these road trips, and you have now these long flights from out west and all this, that there's much more of a chemistry aspect than there ever has been before. And that it's been tough. You got to grow together, and they're going to have the same guys back. And that being said, the beginning of the season, I think we'd have a different outlook on this if the results were different. But Indiana played the harder strength of schedule than they've played in quite some time. They had, if we go back to the first week, I was thinking that I could be talking about this at the end of the season, but this is where we are. That they should have won a game at North Carolina. They had LSU. They had a lead on LSU, and I think it was the eighth inning or something like that. They beat a UCF team who is in somewhat of the hosting conversation right now. They're in the top 25, if not just out of it. And then Notre Dame, not as good, but that was still a winnable game, of course. They competed against these top teams, and it didn't go well. And I think that might have rolled over into the middle of the season when they lost to Washington in the first Big Ten series at home, which we've spoken almost every week about this, that they kind of had no business losing. And I think that's just like a snowball effect, and it kind of lasted the whole season. But my main point here is that they would be bringing back a core part of the team. They can have some fill-ins here. I think also this year, Jackson Bergman, who was their one of the starters, he was out with an injury for the majority of the year at this point. They just had they found some gems here. They got Landon Fry, who's hitting nearly 300, who wasn't supposed to start at all this year, but it just all worked out. Oh, and Tanuver also. I mean, he won the Big Ten Freshman of the Week this past week. That they have the pieces that if they just mesh them together, that they really could be a good team next year. And it's unfortunate that we're talking about this right now, but so be it. And my goal is to win Friday at Wrigley Field. So that's where it starts for me.
And there's a reason why I decided to have this conversation now. Part of it is because we can't keep ignoring it. This is what the fan base is talking about. So,
Right, they got swept at home for the first time since 2023.
yeah. So the this is
Zach, I
coming up.
was from the top team in the conference who went on to host. We just got swept by Iowa. So that's a major difference here. I mean, sometimes you get swept by the number one team in the conference in your own house.
It
And
happens.
this is 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And to never have a lead in the game and to be outscored, what do you say, 28-8?
Yeah.
This was like DEFCON 5 bet. And there's no way to around it. Like Cass said, there's no sugarcoating it. We've underachieved. We've underachieved at the plate. We've certainly underachieved defensively. Has there been some pitching, maybe overachievements? I'd say yes, because we really didn't know what we had pitching, right? We were like, this guy, that guy. And then you got Siebold way above par level, right? You know, you have your par level. And so Siebold's way above. And I'd say, you know, Tony, we didn't know. We knew what he was. We didn't know what he could be. Yarberry, if he's going to end up being a starter, that'd be great, right? But it's a season of underachieving, and there's no way around it. And it sucks, and it hasn't been fun to watch. And you know, you go to baseball games and you follow your baseball game to have fun. And this team hasn't been fun. And I said it a few weeks ago, these guys aren't going anywhere. Like, no one's poaching, you know, they're all coming back. But that was a month ago I said that, because I was hoping that, you know, when they realize now we have to get this going. But we didn't. And it happens, you know. But this was really bad to get swept at home by this Iowa team. So I know we're going to bring up the Maryland thing because that's the last time it happened. But that one, you could even say, well, I mean, they hosted, they were in regional host. They were the number one team in the conference. They had MLB draft picks. The Hawkeyes ain't hosting anything, you know. So just it's an underachievement. It's bad. I really do like what Carl mentioned about the young foundation and what could be next year. But that could have been this year, right? We underachieved, and that's it was it's been frustrating. And yes, the fan base, and I don't know, nationally, I have not heard nationally at all us really being mentioned about hot seat or anything like that. But I've heard
No,
it.
the national thing I was just talking about was looking at teams like LSU that
Right.
were expected to be really, really good because they put all these portal pieces together, when it turns out that the teams that built these young foundations and took their licks before they broke out have really been the successful teams in baseball lately. That's all I was getting at.
Okay, I thought for a minute you were saying, so I was like, why was
No,
he saying?
I'm just talking about that there's some national conversations around the fact that, because what LSU did in their national title 3 years ago, I guess three years ago, you know, was it that was looked at, oh my goodness, the portal is where it's at, you know, because they got Tommy Tanks and Paul Skenes.
Well, if you get them, the portal is where it's at. They're correct.
Right. But no one has replicated that kind of talent out of the portal since
Right.
then.
Nobody's
So
replicated that talent anywhere.
yeah. So.
That there, it's a hit and miss. With Indiana baseball next year, if they return these guys, you have to set the floor higher than you usually would,
Yes.
just for the fact that there's some consistency here.
Well, look, it's taken the team the, you know, half the season to figure out, you know, who should be in the starting lineup. You know, you have a huge difference from who we saw in the lineup at North Carolina. If you really bring this entire core group back, I mean, it could be the same starting lineup that we saw this weekend could be the starting lineup at opening weekend next year.
But Carl, are you saying that is a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm saying that is a good thing.
Okay, because those who watch that entire lineup this weekend would think it's a bad thing. You see what I'm saying? I don't
Did you
want people to take your points away.
see them mashing the ball all day Saturday?
They hit it all to the warning track.
Well,
What I'm saying is, we did not score enough runs, and we've been underachieving as an offense the whole year. So by bringing back this team, some people are going to say, well, we brought them back last year.
then you don't
Well, not
understand the development of college baseball,
right.
because the idea is the more you play, the better you get. These guys are so young, they're getting better all the time. They were
I want them to.
awful in February. I mean, they could not hit. In all, and
It
even the
was
guys
worse.
they could not hit. And now, in the month of April, yes, this last weekend's been bad, but for the most part, in the month of April, they've been mashing the ball.
Well, and even at times this weekend, they were mashing the ball right at people, which
It's just, it kind of
doesn't
reminds me
happen.
of the, I know you never want to be compared to the Mets, But it kind of reminds me how everybody was complaining about that McNeil was let go and Nimmo was let go and Alfonso was let go and all these guys were let go. And I would say to my guys, well, they were all here last year and we collapsed slowly and didn't make the playoffs. So, and then I'm like, well, why are we so upset that we're trying something new? In college, you can't do that. Not with this many guys. I get it. But
Well,
we're
plus,
going to have some improvement.
what are you going to get? If you go into the portal, what are you going to get?
Right. You can't replace them all,
You're
obviously.
going to be getting mid-major guys and
Or a grand slam.
who may have some experience, and occasionally you're going to get a Nick Mitchell out of that group, and that would be amazing. But that's not always what you're going to get.
No,
And
I'm definitely not.
yeah. Go ahead and cast.
I would point out that these IU teams have typically had at least one, what you would call, rock of an upperclassman in the field. And this team just unfortunately doesn't have that. I mean, the closest you've got TJ Skyler, who's a junior, but who didn't have a ton of playing time and whose bat has been his big struggle. You've got Aiden Krause, who has had his moments. You've got Aiden Stewart, who hasn't been what he was projected to be. And then you've got a butt ton of pitchers who are seniors and grads. I'm intrigued to see what this team can do when all of these sophomores are over that sophomore slump type of thing, and and we've got a field full of juniors and older.
Because I mean, look at last year. You got Ricketts didn't play at all. Obviously, he's technically a freshman this year because he redshirted. You've got Decker, who didn't play much.
He pinch ran
He pinch ran a
a
whole bunch.
lot.
Yeah, basically, he just pinch ran a lot.
It was like we had a Vanderbilt guy
Right. I
that's
mean,
been running around.
yeah. I mean, and then you look at Koski, who was decent, but nothing like what he's been this past month. And look at the progression that he's made. And then, but to your point, Cass, that almost put it to where in this team, kind of put the leadership responsibility on its sophomore core. And it's not that I think that they failed. It's just that I think they may have been too young for it. They've been too inexperienced for it. Hanley, Malamezzi, and Denny, this was just not, they didn't have enough experience under their belt to do that. And now that they have been in the role, they've been punched in the mouth. Denny punched in multiple places. And then again, they're going to get a summer under their belt. And some of them, I mean, most of them are getting their second summer under their belt. A chance to get away from this program for a little while, expand on what it is. I think that year is going to be enormously valuable. And having experienced that just rough February already, I think is going to help them get mentally prepared for the next time they go through it.
I also
And
remember that.
it's going to be a different February group than the February group this past year. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I also think you get a full year of game plan when you think like Matt Myers didn't have an entire cycle to get his guys and the pitches that he wants to throw. And then you also I talked about it a couple weeks ago. Indiana had a boatload of home runs the year before with Corbin Dickerson, Devin Taylor, Jake Hanley had a power surge that one year. This year they're not really hitting home runs. Like they have 54 as a team, which I mean that's kind of middle of the pack in the Big Ten. That they've got to steal bases, they've got to lay down bunts. They haven't done that. They haven't made strides to do that kind of small ball and playing good defense. And So they just didn't have an identity this year. What the identity that Mercer looked for, they didn't really put that out on the field. And that if they actually do hone in on that in terms of an off season, that they could have a better outlook as a whole the following year.
And the bulk of those home runs have come in the last month. So
Yeah, it
the
was pretty cold
power,
early. We didn't have
yeah.
many early for sure.
Yeah, it's the power wasn't there. And Coach talked about that too, which is part of it is also you have to understand the way he coaches hitting. In some ways, I mean, obviously he keeps some of this under he doesn't want to let all of his secrets out, but the impression you get from the way that they it's a very complex hitting strategy. And early on, from a results perspective, it may be somewhat more detrimental to results early on until they get all the pieces together and figure it out. Because they're not up there trying to hunt for an easy pitch to hit. Because if you're doing that in college, you can occasionally do some crazy good things because there's going to be mistakes thrown. They're teaching these guys to be professional hitters, to face professional pitching and be professional hitters. And that requires a level of discipline, which is going to produce some frustration early on. But then we'll eventually get to the results that you're seeing from a guy like Caleb Koski in a 22 game hitting streak. That it slowly begins to click with the group and produce results. Now, at the same time, you also do see things like Owen Tanuver, who will, once he gets a chance to get a bat in his hands, so much talent that he's going to break out even with the process. You do have to expect some regression there because you're going to start seeing tape on him and they're going to start to figure out ways to better pitch against him. That happens to all these guys. But I mean, you look at last year, Hogan Denny was, he lost his job. He started as a starting player, lost his job because he couldn't hit. And I think it was just that all these things that we're talking about, but eventually that came along. And the whole team offensively has improved. And that's even with facing some pretty good pitching in this stretch. So, I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic that the offense is going to be significantly better next year. And with your point, Zach, of Matt Myers getting an actual offseason to be involved with both recruiting and development, along with at least a core of five to six key guys that you don't have to completely start from scratch with.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to be optimistic about in the next season. All right. Well, we've gone a little long. That was a pretty involved and intense discussion. So, I appreciate the discussion and the conversation. All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Zach Horwitz, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.